So tell me where you were in the mid to late 1950s, not in Gunnison, Colorado.
No, not at all. And I was born in 43, and so when the 50s came along, the late 50s, I was a teenager, and that was the rock and roll era. And I was in Dallas, Texas. I'm not a Texan by birth. I'm a Kansan, but mom and dad had moved the family to Dallas in 55.
Oh, wow.
And I was in junior high school to start with there, and then in the late 50s, 58, 59, I was in high school. Graduated in 61.
Okay.
And I was in Northeast Dallas. Those people that know Dallas, or people that don't know Dallas, it won't mean anything to them, but there's a lake out of Northeast Dallas called White Rock Lake, and just north of that and adjacent to the lake is an area that's variously called, mostly called Casalinda. There's a Casalinda shopping center there, and that was kind of what gave the area its name. But there's also Casa View Shopping Center, there's Lake Highlands. But in the area north and northeast of White Rock Lake was where mom and dad settled and where I grew up. And it was a very, very fast-growing area of town back in the 50s. And
I'm visualizing lots of ranch houses side by side. Is that kind of
yeah,
what
it
it was
was
like?
suburban America at its worst or best,
Yeah.
depending on how you looked at it.
Right.
But there were still, it was post-war years still.
Right.
And even though GIs were not scrambling for jobs like they were in the late 40s and early 50s, nevertheless, society, was trying to basically integrate all these returning military guys
Right.
back into the culture and the society. And so the baby boomers, I wasn't a baby boomer, I was born during the war, but the post-war baby boomers, all those kids were small. My little brother and sister were definitely baby boomers, and there was a very, very fast-growing population at that time. And so builders were going like crazy to put up these suburban homes, just one after the other, street after street after street of them. There was not a high school out there in that era, and there was a brand new one. I went to a brand new high school that was built specifically for the growth in Northeast Dallas.
What was the name of the high school?
Bryan Adams High School,
Bryan Adams.
named for a guy that had been a school board bigwig during the course of the Dallas public school boom. And as a matter of fact, when they first built the school, there was not a road to it. Yeah.
So real
So,
new.
yeah,
Yeah.
brand new. So
Wow.
streets had to be built and so on. I was in the third graduating class from that school. My older sister, 2 years older than I was in the first graduating class, which was in 59.
Wow. And so what was the were was it all white people in this neighborhood? Was it
Absolutely.
okay,
Yeah.
okay, yeah.
Yeah. Segregation was still alive and well in Dallas during this time, which was strange to us because we had moved from Kansas.
Where'd you move from in Kansas?
Well, the town of El Dorado,
Oh,
which is
yeah.
outside of Wichita.
Yep.
So for several years, Jason, we lived in and around Wichita, even though I was born in Kansas City, but mom and dad post-war settled mostly in and around Wichita in various towns, Valley Center, El Dorado, Wichita itself. I lived for 4 or 5 years in Wichita. So we were used to integrated schools. Some prominent black families in El Dorado, and we didn't really give much thought to it. I think that the president of my sister's freshman class was a black guy. And
Wow.
yeah.
Wow.
And even though they weren't certainly the majority of the population was still Caucasian, but nevertheless, I had black friends and didn't give much thought to it at all until we moved to Dallas and found out that there was a different world out there. So
Right.
yeah, they still had segregation big time. There was a
Wow.
black high school, a couple of black high schools in Dallas
Right,
that were
right.
black only.
Black only.
And Bryan Adams was white only.
Okay.
Very low Hispanic population. I don't even remember it being a demographic factor.
Really? Okay.
I don't remember them being a demographic factor.
And then so when you were going through high school, did you play sports?
I did. Yeah, I started out in scouts. My dad was a big scout, Eagle Scout, and so on. And I, early on in the up in El Dorado, I got into scouts a little bit and went to Dallas, and I was in scouts a little bit until I discovered junior high sports, and then I started playing football, dropped out of scouts, played basketball, ran track, you know, the big three.
Yep.
Even though baseball was played, and I did play. Dallas's version of Little League Baseball, but I just wasn't drawn to it very much. So I did the traditional football, basketball, track kind of thing all the way through junior high and high school.
Wow. Yeah. And so then what was family entertainment? Those of us who play live music like to romanticize that everyone was listening to live music all the time.
Yeah.
But I understand it was also a beginning of television and great movies. And so what did your family do for entertainment?
At that time, I mean, back in the day, when we lived in Valley Center, Kansas, Mom and Dad bought a television, and we only had it for a few weeks, and then they got rid of it because nobody watched it.
That's a great story.
That was back in the days of Howdy Doody and so on. We all lived. Mom and Dad leased some farmland outside of Wichita. And they worked in town, but we lived in a little burg of Valley Center.
Uh-huh.
And there were just too many things going on, you know. I mean, we were farming and 4-H'ing and doing all those kinds of things. And we didn't even watch television. When we moved to Dallas, we didn't have a TV in El Dorado. And when we moved to Dallas in 55, Mom and Dad got a television. My two sisters were junior high school. I had just started 7th grade in junior high, and then I had a younger brother and sister also. And it was, you know, it was more acceptable. I mean, it was more part of the culture, I guess you would say, television.
Uh-huh.
In the big city of Dallas, there were a lot more stations available, you know, shows that were available and so on. And so it was more of a natural thing, I think, to do, to buy a TV. So watching TV, but kids, I think the predominant factor were kids' activities. You know, we were all involved in all kinds of things. My second, the oldest sister, was a dancer. My oldest sister was a singer and sang in operettas at her high school, which was different than mine. And my little brother and sister were too young to really get too involved in much stuff. Then they were kind of just trotting around, following everybody. You know, it was the age of 45s and rock and roll and, you know, Casa Linda and Casa View Plazas, the shopping centers, both had record shops in them.
Okay.
And in those days, the record shops all had booths, soundproof booths that you could go into that were, you know, had a window in them or glass partition in them. And you could take demo 45s and say, you know, take 5 or 6 or whatever. I don't remember them limiting the number of records that you took in, but they probably did if they were smart.
Yeah. So you could listen to the records before you bought.
Yeah.
Before you bought it.
Exactly. Wow. Just sit 45, in there. You and your friends could go in there. There were, you know, 3 or 4 chairs in there and a turntable, and you could just play records to your heart's content and buy. It was kind of it wasn't a soda shop. Without that kind of thing, it was sort of a hangout.
Okay,
you
know,
you go, you went and you hung out in the record shops, and you played music. And we had a turntable in my sister's bedroom, and, you know, stacks of 45s, and we would go back in there and listen to music.
Right. So 1958, 59, 60, I guess by 1959 and 60, we're talking the Elvis Presley would be dominant.
Yeah, he first broke in 55, I think I'm right, Heartbreak Hotel
and
some of those. So Elvis was big.
And who else do you remember as being the big stars of the day?
Buddy Holly, for sure.
Texan.
Lubbock, Texas.
Yep.
Let's see, Elvis, the Platters, Coasters. I'm probably dating myself a little bit here. Some of those came on a little bit later, but
and what about the singers that people now they're people make fun of them a little bit, I think unfairly, but the Pat Boones and
Pat Boone was a bit of a transition, if you will, from the previous era, if you will. You know, he was a squeaky clean guy,
right,
with the white buck shoes and so on.
Yeah.
So there was that element certainly, and then isolated hits from people like Debbie Reynolds singing Tammy, and you know, so many of the one hit wonders and the doo-wop groups started hitting the scene. I look back now and I see, or I hear, or I see a special or something on it, and there was, I guess, a bit of a friction among the white populace and the acceptance or lack thereof of black music, particularly black groups.
Yeah.
I never felt that. I was totally unaware.
Okay.
Totally unaware of it. I mean, it just wasn't talked about. Oh, that's a black group. I mean, you know, so what? It was all about, you know, top 10 music and listening to car radios a lot, and as well as records.
And later on in high school, were there dances? And did the dancers have live music?
Yeah.
Or did they have record hops?
I think
hops?
That our part of Dallas was very unusual.
Okay.
And it wasn't, I don't think that it was anything that anybody created. I inherited it. But when I was, like I said, we moved there when I was in the seventh grade, but my sisters were ninth grade and 10th grade. And so I was exposed to a lot of older kids' kinds of groups and habits and pastimes more than many of my friends, because we were pretty young. You know, I was 12 years old. I was a year ahead in school because Mom and Dad started me in school early. So, you know, I was 12 and 11 when I started the seventh grade, and turned 12 during my seventh grade year, but I was rubbing shoulders culturally with ninth graders and 10th graders.
Right.
And so I largely inherited what was going on in Northeast Dallas, for lack of a better description of that geographic area. And dancing was huge.
Okay.
It was a big deal.
And what kind of dancing? What did it look like?
Well, it started out as kind of an awkward sort of bebop kinds of things, but they called it bop, and American Bandstand came on, and that started influencing more of a universal, you know, dance style that was a transition between the jitterbug of the 40s and the more separated dancing, you know, that came on in the 50s and 60s. So there was some transition in there, but the first one was this bop sort of thing that you did to the early rock and roll stuff. Didn't last very long, but what developed in Northeast Dallas was this strange couples dancing called the low life, and it was not done, to my knowledge, anywhere in the world.
That's great.
Not to be overly dramatic, but as far as I know, it wasn't, and it was kind of the dirty dancing of its day. And it was done specifically to, you know, certain kind of rhythms and beats, and Northeast Dallas, Bryan Adams High School and the Jason High School, Woodrow Wilson, there was a little bit of low life dancing there, but it was mostly relegated to the White Rock area of Dallas.
Where do you think this dance came from? Do you think it was influenced by African American dance? Do you think it was, or did it come from some even older, you know, 19th century Scotch-Irish Texan stuff?
No, I find little connection. If you watch the early lowlife that morphed over time. You know, the lowlife that I did my senior year in high school was much different than the lowlife I did when I was in the eighth grade, for instance. The basic steps were the same, but the position of the girl and the guy were different.
Okay.
It's hard to make a connection between it and any other dance style or steps that I was aware of. My parents were dancers.
Okay. Okay.
Big time, but it was all foxtrot kinds of stuff and swing, you know, swing band era kinds of things. And I don't the low life's like not like anything.
I've not ever this is great. Seen her. So, it was 1961, although it had been around for a few years, 1961, Chubby Checker hits with The Twist. Mm-hmm. How did that impact? What did your parents think of The Twist? That's my first question.
They more or less tolerated, you know, the music that the kids were doing. I can remember trying to convince my mother of how great Johnny Mathis's voice was.
I said, Mom,
this is a really trained, well-trained voice.
Yeah,
I know all about it. Well, she was a Frank Sinatra fan.
Oh, okay. Well, there's no persuading
a
Sinatra
fan. Bobby Soxer.
Okay.
So she wasn't too persuaded. But my family were... All of the kids were very influenced by the music that my mom and dad played. I still have LPs over there, vinyls, you know, from their era that I've inherited.
And were they great American songbook singers?
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So great. We were also a singing family from the get go.
Right.
All seven of us sang together, and it was a favorite pastime on trips to sing together. In fact, my sisters and I and brother can still break into song, and you know, it'd drop the hat literally and sing all these things we used to sing. So we were around music a lot. Music was played in our house a lot, not just our 45s, but also we could, you know, do the turntable and switch it over to 78s or 33 and a thirds and play, you know, all kinds of stuff from show, Broadway show albums to, Benny Goodman stuff and, you know, the whole deal, Count Basie things. And
okay.
So we were as a family exposed to a wide variety of music genres when we were growing up. But the low life was done mostly to popular stuff.
Okay.
Chuck Berry stuff was great to do the low life too. Some it lent itself more to certain kinds of beats than others, and certain kind of music than others. You didn't low life to Pat Boone.
You didn't low life to Pat Boone.
No. No. For sure.
I'm going to bring up a little bit of Chuck Berry and Jimmy Reed.
Okay.
And we're not going to listen long, but let's just see if I can get at what we're talking here. So, let's see. So here is, here's Chuck Berry's first hit, probably.
Maybelline?
Right. Maybelline, why can't you be true? So that's about 1955.
Okay.
Why can't you be true? So was that kind of would that be a low life beat? That's
absolutely
pretty fast. Oh, you, okay.
Yeah.
Really, that would be a low life beat. Okay, great.
Not so much the original low life, but as it morphed by the time I was a junior or senior in high school, if that came up, I would be grabbing my favorite dancing partner. You could not keep us off the floor.
Okay.
Maybelline was playing.
Okay, great.
Or that beat, including Johnny B. Goode, and particularly Johnny B. Goode.
Right.
By the time we were a little bit older, but.
Right. Okay. So. Yeah, so Johnny B. Goode.
Yeah. Gene Snipes and I. Dance in the low life.
Okay.
All over the floor.
And so the low life was a partner dance.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great.
And the position.
Kind of like a swing, kind of what I think of as, what would it be, swing dancing in the mid to late 40s?
Yeah, I guess it was more equatable to that than.
Okay.
Anything,
so,
but it was still
and men and women, like men twirling the girls, guys twirling the gals, I guess.
No, not so much.
Not
it
so
was
much.
Mostly a more, I don't know how to describe it, because you stayed in a couple position.
Okay.
The twirling took place, but it was as a couple.
Okay.
It was, I guess the basic step of the low life was that the male became a pivot point, and the girl went around, if you will, not twirled,
uh-huh.
under the arm or anything, but went around the guy.
Okay.
And then the girl became the pivot point, and the guy went around the girl.
Wow. Okay.
And
okay.
And you danced it mostly in a circle around the dance floor, but not not circle up. It wasn't a circle dance.
Right.
But you would dance counterclockwise around the dance floor, so that the entire crowd was kind of moving counterclockwise around.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Around the dance floor.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a rule, or you know,
it just happened.
Just the way that it did. It was a traveling kind of dance, if you will.
Okay, great. I'm going to play something else for you. This is Jimmy Reed.
Mm-hmm.
So Jimmy Reed had, as I mentioned earlier, had huge success. Well, not huge success. He was no Elvis, but he had a few hits that crossed over from black radio into things that made the top 40 of the white radio stations. Mm-hmm. Billboard kept an R&B chart, and they kept a Hot 100 chart, which was, so sadly those were kind of white radio and black radio, but there was a lot of what they call crossover along the way. So let me see if this one, so Jimmy Reed's big hit, here's one of his, this is the slow one. Honest I Do.
Honest I Do. I know it well. Honest I Do. Yeah.
Right. So this would have been about 1959.
Right.
And this...
That's a lowlife, believe it or not. Even though we just listened to Chuck Berry in those faster tunes, this is more of the original lowlife.
Okay, the slower.
Yeah, back when I was in 7th and 8th grade.
Uh-huh.
We had two dance clubs. I mean, this is how popular dancing was in our part of town. Every every Friday night, we had what was called a Teen Timers Dance Club.
Teen Timers Dance Club.
Teen Timers Dance Club.
How does that work?
And you paid 50 cents, and you got a card, and that card lasted, as I recall, for like 3 months membership.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And at a larger room in one of the shopping centers, actually, that is still there. I just was there last year.
Okay.
We would, you know, show up at the door and show our Teen Timers dance card, and we would go. And that was records. They rarely had live music at that.
Okay.
And then every other Saturday night at the local rec center, just across the street from my high school, was the White Rockers Dance Club.
Okay.
And that was a little bit more expensive, and more often than not, they had live bands there. But they were all local bands. Many of the bands came from my high school.
You know? Oh, really?
Yeah.
So were they fellow teenagers or recent teenagers?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Friends of mine.
Okay. Did you ever hear of a Dallas band called the Nightcaps?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm really interested in these two guys from Dallas, Jimmy Vaughn and Stevie Ray Vaughan. They were from Southwest Dallas.
Okay. Oak Cliff area, probably.
Yes, exactly. Oak Cliff. And so they went on to fame. Jimmy Vaughn founded a band called the Fabulous Thunderbirds.
Oh.
And he's still going strong today. Stevie Ray Vaughan had a big kind of turn into a rock star in the 80s. Both of them heavily influenced by the Nightcaps. So tell me what you remember about them. I kind of read a little bit as they were just a solid working band. They were white, right?
Yeah. I don't remember very much because probably the strongest local band was Don Hosek and the, what do you call them? Don Hosek and the Spades, or Don Hosek and the something. I don't remember.
Don Hosek, okay.
But a lot of the music was like... Jimmy Reed, there was a lot of harmonica playing, and that backbeat, you know, that really solid backbeat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't remember a lot about the Nightcaps other than I recognize the name. And I would, you know, if they played at our dances, I wouldn't be surprised if they did. Otherwise, I doubt that I would remember the name.
Right. Oh, interesting. Okay. So... Let me play you another. Let's stop and play another Jimmy Reed here.
Okay.
Let's see.
Mm-hmm.
Big Boss Man.
Big Boss Man.
Does that ring a bell? Does that sound familiar? Yeah. Okay, yeah. It has a really heavy backbeat.
Right.
That the 2 and the 4 of the measure are being hit really hard.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
So that again, that was a great. That's it.
That's a low
really
light.
Great low light tune.
Okay, great.
So here we go out to Teen Timers Dance Club. And I didn't know for nothing. I mean, there I was, a 12-year-old, and you know, my sisters would, oh, you got to come to Teen Timers with us. And I think as much as anything, they probably wanted a dancing partner
that
they could rely on
right.
and then send me on my way.
Once the other dancers showed up.
So, so the music that was played, were some of which were familiar to me because of the 45s that we had, but then here came this Jimmy Reed that was playing, and I didn't know Jimmy Reed from anything. But he really caught on in Northeast Dallas, and I attribute it to the fact that we danced the lowlife, and the lowlife fit that particular style of music real well. I do not remember that we played that kind of bluesy, heavy beat music other than Jimmy Reed.
Interesting.
I don't remember another artist that we listened to and danced to that was anything like him or like that. And so it was a real, what I thought was an anomaly. You know, I would go other places and say, well, do you have any Jimmy Reed music? And they'd say, who's that?
Wow, fascinating.
It was played a lot, not even so much at White Rock or Dance Club, because that was live music, that was mostly our bands. But at Teen Timers, where we had recorded music played, he was, you know, probably every, I don't know, 8th, 6th, 7th, 8th record was a Jimmy Reed tune.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I remember that Reed was in Dallas, and I didn't know that. I didn't know he was in Dallas, but he showed up at Teen Timers Dance Club, and I knew that. You know, I was there.
So you were there when he walked in?
Yeah.
Wow.
He walked in the door, and, you know, people were mobbing, you know, the fans and the crowd was mobbing him and getting autographs and all
that.
Oh,
great. Really?
And he didn't play.
He was just kind of an appearance.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I think that he knew that his records were selling like hotcakes out in this Casa Linda area, White Rock, and... he thought that he'd go take a look at what this phenomenon was.
That's white, amazing.
These totally white kids that were playing his music.
And do you remember what he was wearing by chance?
No, I can conjure up an image. It was probably from some photo that I've seen him on one of his jacket, you know, a jacket cover. But.
Yeah, I had, I read an interview with Jimmy Vaughn, this guy who grew up in Oak Cliffs, and he saw Jimmy Reed right at the end of his life in 1976. And he said he was had two-toned shoes on.
Yeah,
kind of cream and brown.
Yeah, that would not surprise
shoes.
Me at all. Yeah.
And he said he had a hard time. He idolized him so much he had a hard time thinking of anything to ask him, or because he was kind of dumbstruck by him. Jimmy Reed was one of my teacher in Mississippi. Jimmy Reed was one of his teachers.
Oh.
And because Jimmy Reed was initially from around that part of Mississippi. But that was all in a completely African American environment. I think one of the interesting things I find, let me know what you think, is for me in some ways it's so interesting that this African American tradition through the radio and really 45s could land in an all white up and coming suburb of Dallas and just resonate so deeply.
It's a very strange phenomenon that happened like it did, because like I said, the genre was not familiar to me in any way, shape, or form. I don't know any of the black performers of the era that were popular and known, and I didn't even know anything about Jimmy Reed. I just know that we listened to his music and we danced to it and we loved it.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow. So, then, you've kept, over the years, you went on to, I've seen you perform many years ago in local productions here in Gunnison.
Yeah.
What else have you done with music and art and dance?
Well, the only thing that I have done, Jason, is choral singing and theater singing.
Right.
Broadway
right.
type shows.
Uh-huh.
I didn't discover, well, that's not true. My family was involved in theater productions from the get-go. I mean, Mom and Dad were both, Dad was involved in a Kiwanis club that did annual shows big time. I mean, the director of the shows was a guy that directed the Dallas Summer Musicals and that kind of thing. He was a member of their club. So they would put on these shows. Mom and Dad was in them. Dad was actually in a Dallas Summer Musical. I think he was part of the quartet and the Music Man or something like that, the Barbershop Quartet and the Music Man. My next, the oldest sister, as I said, was a dancer, and she started out in ballet, but eventually danced on Broadway.
Wow.
And danced in the Dallas Summer Musicals, so there was that theater element, but I didn't really do too much. I was in my senior play, but that was about it. But when we got to Gunnison in the mid to late 70s, there was an active community theater group here, the Webster Players. I don't know.
Oh, sure, Webster Players, right? They were pretty active at the time.
I thought, gosh, that'd be fun. And so I tried out and got in a couple of shows and ended up being president of that organization, actually. Those were the days when they did major musicals. You know, they did The Music Man, actually, and they did Fiddler on the Roof, and they did Annie, and they just kept coming with these things, as well as some legitimate theater. I mean, what I call serious theater.
Right, okay.
But non-musicals is what I should put it, legitimate theater.
Right.
But then some smaller things I was in and directed the Fantastics and that kind of thing. So that community theater and acting was my art form.
Mm-hmm.
But then also along the way, we all sang church choirs as kids. And then I sang in a cappella choir in my college, and we started an adult singing group here in Gunnison that I was in. It was a college community choir for a while, and I sang in that. So my involvement in music is mostly choral music and musical theater. I picked up a baritone uke, and I played a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm.
Year and a half ago, I started taking piano lessons.
Mm, great.
You know, that sort of thing. Great. But otherwise, I don't consider myself to be a musician per se, somewhat of a vocalist, I guess, in terms of choral music.
Right. Well, I if you're doing the lead in Music Man, I think you're a singer.
Yeah, I did do the lead in Music Man, both here and in Montrose.
Great.
Then Daddy Warbucks, of course, and Annie. I was a constable or something like that in Fiddler, and I played, My Fair Lady, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
I played Eliza's father,
okay.
Doolittle, the dustman, get me to the church on time.
Mm-hmm.
I played that, and bunch of those things.
So do you think your sister would remember the low-life dancing days differently than you? What do you think she would remember differently than what you did? Because she was older.
That was kind of interesting because this past year happened to have been the 55th high school reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And back in 66, what year are we in?
Now would be, 2016. Yeah.
2016, and we were asked to join forces with the other two classes, the first two classes at Bryan Adams, and have a combined reunion. So I was a co-chair of the committee, and we had what we call the founding classes reunion. So
excellent.
59, 60, and 61. Well, she was in 59, and she came to the reunion from Costa Rica, which is where she lives, and we danced the Lowlife together. And her recollection of it was early Lowlife.
Uh-huh.
And my recollection was more what I did when I was a senior, junior and senior in high school, which was a little bit different.
Can you describe the differences?
The early one was more that Jimmy Reed, sound. The later one was faster.
Okay.
It was less pronounced in the body positions of the male and the female.
Okay.
The early body positions were more, like I said, the kind of dirty dancing of its day.
Okay.
There was a little bit of kind of hunching that went on, as you danced around the dance floor.
Yeah.
It's sort of what my dad used to call the why dance.
The why dance.
The why dance. And I said, what do you mean the why dance? And he said, why dance?
That's a great one. That's a great one.
And so then, you know, just within those 2 or 3 years, it became a little bit more mainstream, I guess you would say.
Do you think it was influenced at all by American Bandstand?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think all dancing was influenced by American Bandstand.
Okay. But the lowlife, in your mind, remains, the early lowlife especially, remains separate from what the kids in Philadelphia were doing.
Oh, yeah. Way separate.
Okay.
No similarity whatsoever.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Wow.
Yeah, they would call that slow dancing in those days, or you either jitterbug kind of thing, or you slow danced.
Okay.
And the low life was not like either one of them.
Okay, great. Yeah. Wow. So, anything else you want to tell us about being a teenager in Northeast Dallas? Where'd you go to college?
I went 60 miles north of Dallas to a small college named Austin College.
It's
a Presbyterian school.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the oldest college in the state of college or university in the state of Texas that's still operating under its original charter.
Wow.
It was not in Austin, but it was named for Stephen F. Austin's family. And I don't know, it was founded in 1849 or something like that. But it was a small liberal arts school. Mm-hmm.
And what's the neighborhood like now around what was the Teen Timers Dance Club? What's the neighborhood like there now in terms of racial, ethnic, or economic?
Very, very different racially.
Mm-hmm.
Bryan Adams High School is majority Hispanic.
Uh-huh.
And I would think that the next ethnic group, because I have visited there several times during classes and I walked around, would be black, and then whites would be the smallest of the racial groups at the high school now, whereas it used to be all white.
Interesting.
There are still sections of residential areas around Casa Linda Plaza, for instance, Casa Linda Shopping Center, that are a little bit more upscale, kind of upper middle class housing. But then there's a lot of that area that's still very middle class, lower middle class, the further you get out away from the Casa Linda. Even the difference between Casa View Shopping Center and Casa Linda Shopping Center, which were only, I don't know, maybe a half mile apart.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very different in terms of this nature, the kinds of stores and shops and so on. Casa Linda is still pretty upscale, and Casa View is not and never was.
Interesting.
It was more like more dollar store kinds of places, and the houses around it reflect that.
Wow.
And vice versa for Casa Linda. But all that was in the Bryan Adams and Gaston Junior High school district. It used to be all white, and now it's not. But the economic, socioeconomic differences are probably pretty much the same as they were, I would say. It's just racially very different.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
It's fun to reminisce.
Yeah, it's fun to hear about it. All right, thank you very much.